Hello, Tia. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Pam. Hello.
Welcome back.
We are here with Paul Zimmer, Dr. Paul Zimmer, and Tia Lieber, who are just back sort of visiting, right, from their tour in Abu Dhabi. And Mike Wall is also here. So we're just going to chat and talk to us about your experience in Abu Dhabi. And Paul, you were with the embassy, with the State Department, right?
Right, right.
And your job there was?
I was, they called me a regional medical officer. So that meant I was the physician taking care of employees at the embassy, but in a whole region, not just Abu Dhabi, but all up and down the Persian Gulf to Kuwait and Oman and Dubai as well.
So you got to travel a bit. With your job.
Spent about a third of my time traveling.
Adventurous. It was adventurous. I mean, what made you make the decision that that's where it was something that you wanted to do after you spent a lot of years here as a physician?
Well, you know, I'd been here 22 years working at Kima and then at the Community Health Center. And then we had our kids here. Our kids went through school and then they graduated and left the house and we're sitting at home staring at each other and thinking we got to do something here. But the other thing is I'd been here 22 years. And so I was delivering babies from women that I had delivered as babies, you know,
oh,
and
wow.
It seemed like, well, you know, we've sort of done that whole family medicine thing and the kids are gone and we always had a hankering to travel. So we thought we'd scratch that itch for a while and see how it went.
Tia, what do you think about going to Abu Dhabi?
Well, I thought we had a choice, but when they told us we were going to Abu Dhabi, they said, "Well, your choice is either Abu Dhabi or nothing, you know, or you're not in the State Department." So we decided. I wasn't very excited at first, and
why?
I grew to like it. I was thinking I was going, a woman, Western woman, going to a Arabic culture, Muslim, you know, I felt like I was going to be, pushed into, you know, a round person pushed into a square box sort of thing. And it wasn't that bad at all. Abu Dhabi and Dubai are very tolerant. And if you get outside of those cities, that there's that expectation. You have to have your elbows covered, your knees covered, and your head covered. And, if we would go out mountain biking or something like that, and I'd come into a restaurant for the chicken and rice lunches, that's what it was always served. If I didn't have, if I was wearing my bike shorts, and that wasn't good.
But we were also a little hesitant about because of the environment, the heat. We were worried about it was too hot.
Right.
And we had this, we kind of imagined it as just a totally artificial environment, which turned out to be pretty much what it was. Kind of the antithesis of Kodiak, which we love Kodiak. I mean, we're here and we stayed 22 years because we loved it here so much. And Abu Dhabi is like the complete opposite.
I would say so.
Yeah.
It's hot.
So
it's humid, too.
Humid, and you were telling us earlier about the amount of sand and how, talk a little bit about the vegetation and how they deal with the trees.
The lack of vegetation. They got dealt a pretty interesting hand when they were giving out real estate. I mean, it's...
You get the oil, but you don't get any plants. Sorry.
That's right. They didn't even know they had the oil, but it's just dead. It's flat. It's like this kind of off-white dust color, and there's nothing that grows there. And except since they discovered oil, and they stuck a hole in the ground, and the oil came out, and they've been pumping money out of the ground since 1960s, and they have so much money that they can do anything they want now. And so They desalinate the Arabian Gulf to make water, and they use that water to plant trees in the desert. And they've planted miles and miles and miles of acres of forests of palm trees. And each palm tree has a little black plastic tube that goes to it and drips water onto it.
In the most amazing places you would not expect. You know, off the grid, you're off the grid for electricity, but they still have a tube going to these palm trees.
That are around.
Yeah. And every once in a while you'll be driving by and you'll see like this forest, former forest of palm trees that are just dry as a bone, and somebody just turned the water off.
Yeah. And we say forest, you know, really, you would not call them forest if you saw them.
Clump of trees?
Straight lines of trees, maybe 30 feet or so, and a little black tube between each one.
So you're a member of a, are there 60 countries? Is that what I remember you saying, that there are physician ambassadors for?
Well, no, we have embassies and consulates in like 250 places. And so, but my job as regional medical officer, there's 60 of us around the world, and we all cover a little cluster of countries.
So you had Kuwait, Oman, the Emirates, and there was a fourth?
Well, Dubai was part of the Emirates.
Okay.
And some cover just one or two countries, and some people cover 8 or 10 or more countries. So it's kind of
fun.
Does
that mainly depend on geography and the ability to get from country to country? Or
part of it is like travel connections. Part of it is where it's busy and where the need is.
Yeah.
The size of the embassy.
So once you get admitted into the program, then you, low on the totem pole, get, that's how you wound up living where you did, right?
Right. They had, we didn't really know. It was sort of an opaque process getting the job, and we didn't really know what all the rules were. And we thought maybe we'd have a little bit of choice, but it turned out you get offered the job, and then you get told where you go. And now the second time around, since we've finished up in Abu Dhabi and we're moving on to Senegal, we actually had a little bit of choice there.
Abu Dhabi is actually a very desirable place for many of the Foreign Service people.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, because it's got paved highways, and they're smooth. The water, you can drink the water out of the faucet.
It's safe.
Well, the desalinity plants must be huge.
Yeah, but they keep them out of sight.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Yeah. But for
security, but also it's very much a kind of controlled environment where you live.
It's a big facade.
Yeah, it is.
It's not beautiful.
And all the, like, there was one part of the city called Mustafa, which is where all the real work got done. But that was off on the side. And that was like where all the workshops, all the factories, and it's just like the beehive of activity. And then everybody lived in this other part of the city, which is, you know, where everything's very clean and neat and beautiful, gardens and skyscrapers. But you couldn't, you know, you wouldn't, if you had to get your car fixed, you had to drive it yourself about 30
out of
minutes
sight,
out of town.
Out of sight, out of mind. And this is all for tourism purposes?
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. They just want to live that way.
Yeah. Oh. They.
Because their economy is not very broad, is it? I mean, other than an oil economy and now an attempt to add tourism to the mix, what else is there for people to do?
Well, NASA is working with them. They're trying to get to Mars.
yeah, believe it or not, they have a space
I think
program.
You were already there, man.
It did look a lot like that. But no, actually, they're trying to do all kinds of things.
Or the blue patch now on Mars, but anyway.
They're trying to do all kinds of things. They built an aluminum plant, and what they do is they build a factory or a plant, and they import workers, and they import the raw materials, and then they make all the profit. But they created an airline, and they're developing thousands and thousands of hotels, and they've built huge indoor amusement parks, which are all air conditioned. shopping malls everywhere you go.
Well, and we were talking earlier about the museums that are coming into, what did you say, the Guggenheim?
Guggenheim and the Louvre.
Have branches
in
Dubai. But I find it interesting, what we were talking about earlier is the whole worker system is just fascinating. That Paul was mentioning earlier that you met people from everywhere in the world, but you rarely met anybody from the Emirates.
It's an amazing melting pot with people from everywhere who are there to make money. And so it's great. It's fascinating. It's like living in the Epcot Center. You know, and all your neighbors and friends are from, you know, 12 different
everywhere.
Countries. But yeah, you live next door and side by side with the Emiratis, but you really don't interact with them very much. Hmm. And it's kind of bizarre. They live in their palaces and they drive their big cars, and but they don't mix very much. I would occasionally mix with them at embassy functions or and when I went to some hospitals and different medical facilities, but not very often.
So culturally, your experience was more with the worker.
Yeah, yeah, the expats.
Yeah.
Now, that was different. When I went to Oman, for example, Oman is a different kind of place. They have a little bit of oil, enough to sort of cover their costs, but not enough to make them fabulously wealthy. And so they actually have to work for a living there. And the Omanis are just it's marvelous. You meet them in all kinds of places, and they work in regular jobs, and they work in the embassy, and you get to know them, and they're it's a whole different experience in a country like that.
So the Emiratis are all partake? I mean, they all are wealthy equally, let's say?
Well, there's the different emirates. There's how many different emirates?
There's seven emirates.
Seven.
Some of them are more equal than others.
Yeah, the ones that have oil, Abu Dhabi is by far the wealthiest. And Zayed, what was he? He was the founding father of the nation. He had a lot of foresight, and he just made sure that it was like the permanent fund dividend. So every Emirati gets a certain amount of money, and it's huge. It's over $100,000 a year that each person gets.
Well, they get free housing, they get free medical care, they all get subsidized car purchases, and so yeah, it's a nice place
to be. They're well taken care of.
But there are different, there's a lot of tribal differences too, and there's like, so certain families, if you have the right family name, you might do a lot better than, you know, depending on where you come from and who you're related to.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand all that. I think you have to live there for a long time to really understand how that all works.
Yeah.
And I just sort of got an inkling of that. It seems to be the case.
Yeah. So there's some smaller emirates that didn't get any oil money, and you go through those towns, and they're very poor.
Well, poor is not quite the word to use, but poorer.
Poorer.
Comparatively. So, Tia, while you were there, what was your day-to-day experience?
I started off shortly after I arrived. There was a ad in the embassy newsletter that they had an urgent need for a fourth grade teacher at the American International School. So I thought, I still have my teaching certification, so I'll go ahead and apply for it. And I was hired immediately 4 days before the students arrived. Ooh. So it was, slam
bang.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I had 22 students in a room that wasn't much bigger than this room. And 17 of them came from countries so they weren't native English speakers. And five of them were. And it was a very interesting, it was difficult. It was by far the most difficult teaching job I'd ever had.
And those 22 kids were from 17 different countries, right?
Yeah. Yep. And so I had kids, trying to learn the alphabet, and they'd write something out, and they couldn't decipher like a G from a six, or they would mix their numbers and letters, and I just like, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into?
Well, some of them were working on their second and third and fourth languages, weren't they?
Yes, I had one girl. She was born in Uzbekistan. When she was 3 years old, she moved to Turkey. So her first language was Uzbeki, then she learned Turkish. Then she went to the States, and she was in the schools for a year in the States, and then came into Abu Dhabi, and Arabic is required for the students as well. So she was on her fourth language, and she was 9 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Huh. Good thing you're a sponge when you're that young.
Yeah.
For those kids. Wow. So what was it like living in a country that is so different than not only Kodiak, I mean, climate-wise and certainly people to people wise, it sounds very different. What was it like? What was your favorite experience? What was your least favorite part about it?
Well, boy, I think if you drove through Abu Dhabi, you'd probably feel very comfortable because it seems like a comfortable environment with nice roads, nice cars,
sure,
buildings and all. But if you look carefully, you'd see that there were cameras everywhere. If you rode a cab taxi, there'd be a camera in the cab. If, in the elevator, there were cameras. Every street post had a camera on it. And so it's not obvious, but it's kind of a police state. And you felt like, at first it felt kind of creepy, like you were being watched, because you were being watched all the time.
Right.
And then we kind of got used to it. But the flip side of that is there's no crime, and so it's very safe, and so you don't have to lock things up. You can, you know, single women can take cabs around town or can walk anywhere, and they're not hassled, and so that was kind of nice. But I guess what we disliked the most about it was just the fact that it was such a contrived, made-up environment, which is so different from Kodiak. And I think the things that we liked were getting away from that.
Oh, yeah.
Getting to places like the dunes and the empty quarter, or getting to the mountains in Oman and finding these really magical little gems hidden away that are not obvious when you land at the airport and you stay in the big cities.
Yeah. The natural environment was completely altered, and they continued to do that. And historically, they would pearl dive. That was, you know, just two generations ago. This is such a brand new country. In fact, you go to a historical museum and all, you realize you're in there looking at all these old photographs, but they're all in color. You know, so
not that old.
Yeah, just since the 60s. And they were pearl divers, and you know, and ate dates, and they were Bedouin, you know, nomadic people, and they would go for the nearest oasis was a place called Alain, and it takes an hour and a half to drive there, but it would take 5 days on camel, you know. And you hear stories of our contemporaries talking about when they were infants or small children taking those camel rides, and you know, and their grandparents dying on that trip. Mm. You know, their grandparents didn't make it to the oasis.
Wow.
So it was really a harsh, harsh environment. I took 6 weeks of Arabic. Paul took, you know, years of Arabic. But I asked my Arabic teacher, did the greeting, Assalamu alaikum, is that a Muslim term? It means peace be with you. And she said, no, that goes back to Bedouin days, when people would come over the hill and you had your water, your drinking water well. Did they come in peace, or did they come to kill you off to get your water well?
Wow.
And then the response was, wa alaikum assalam, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I come in peace. And so, you know, and that wasn't that long ago. You know,
certainly within our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah.
Have they lost touch with that piece of culture?
Yes, absolutely. They're trying to bring it back.
They are. Okay.
They're trying to bring it back, and it's forced.
Mm. Yeah, you can sort of see them sort of trying to create these legends and this lore and kind of keep the tradition going. You know, there's a lot of, I think. Well, actually, if you drive on a weekend, you can drive through the highway through the desert, and you'll see families pulled off just on the side of the highway, just sitting in the sand, having a picnic. You know,
and
sitting there.
These are like 14-lane highways.
Do they have that much traffic though?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
They do.
Oh, they love cars. They drive cars everywhere. But so they like to go to the desert, like to camp. They'll set up big tents, Bedouin style tents. They all, you know, the wealthy ones have owned camels, and they do enter in camel races. Camel racing is a big thing. Mm-hmm. Hunting with falcons, that's another falconry. Yeah.
I had a student whose father found out that we were from Alaska, and so he talked about, he was very excited about hunting. And he said, well, I hunt. And I said, there's no animals there. You know, they're trying to bring the oryx back. And I, you know, was trying to be, you know, oh, you know, how exciting. What do you hunt for? And he said, well, rabbits and small animals. And, you know, we continued to talk. And it turns out they would go, he and his friends would go to Kazakhstan. They would hunt with falcons. And I asked him, well, how do you get to Kazakhstan? And he said, well, my friend has a 727.
So they here your charter. Here your charter with Beaver. There your charter with 727.
And the day before everybody arrives, their servants they bring their tents, which are these big Bedouin. You know, they're the size of a small house. Mm-hmm. They bring their tents. They erect the tents. They get the falcons there on their perches, and it, you know, everything. They get everything ready to go, and then the hunters arrive in the next day. So it's only a 3-hour flight, so it was no big deal that for the pilot of the 727. But
do they need a runway?
Or do they just land in the desert?
On the highway.
Yeah.
But actually, you'd see Tia's favorite. Well, you see a lot of luxury cars in Abu Dhabi, and the one that got Tia's attention was the Bentley that you could buy that had a falcon perch for a passenger seat.
Wow.
You would see in the airport, you would see people with their falcons, you know, walking into the first class lounge, you know, waiting for their flight.
Hmm.
I don't know if they have to buy a ticket for the falcon.
For the falcon or not. Interesting.
Do they have security at the airport?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with the falcon?
I don't know. Maybe pass it through the x-ray machine.
I wouldn't want to bat it down. So what's it like living in a Muslim country?
Yeah, they're very peaceful people, more so than I think here. You know, you never hear of school shootings. You never hear of drive-by shootings. You know, they're very peaceful, and you know, their greeting is "Peace be with you." And
you were worried about being a woman in a Muslim country.
Yeah,
but that wasn't really an issue for you.
It wasn't. Well, you know, I was allowed to drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Saudi Arabia, although UAE, United Arab Emirates, follows everything, just about everything that Saudi Arabia does.
Politically.
Politically,
but
right.
The lifestyles are quite different.
Right. And now you're just in the 2 years that we've been there, you've seen young women, you know, high school and college age women, not wearing the hijab over their heads, you know, letting their hair down. And they're still wearing the abaya, but they don't zip it up. They just use it like a jacket. And that's happening in Iran. And so now you're seeing women being a little bit more carefree. And
the government promotes women in government. And women, there's a lot of women ministers, and they promote women going to college. And so at least in the Emirates, they're trying to.
But do they, I guess I'm having a hard time, do they work? Do the Emirate people work?
They often get jobs in government.
Yeah, government.
They're mostly government jobs. So if I went to a government hospital, most of the workers, most of the physicians and the staff would be from Western Europe or from India or from other countries. But the administrators would be Emiratis.
So if they're the women and the young women coming out of college, do they move into the workforce? Is that open, or do they even need to work into the
Well, they don't need to work. No, I mean, financially they won't need to work, but they are coming into the workforce. And
so the engineers and the architects and the physicians and the people that do the everyday work of the nation are from, not from there.
Correct. Right.
There's actually a big push right now to hire, to get the locals working in more of the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they will often let a expat go and fill the position with a local hire. And
so that'll be, do you think that's where they're moving with women going to school?
Yeah,
to
college? I think that's the idea, right?
Huh.
So their workforce is primarily people from all over the world. And how do they get there? I mean, how would you, if you're from the Philippines or you're from
India,
how would you get recruited or decide to go to a place like this and say, I want a job? And then what happens to you when you get there?
Well, I think they have, I'm not really sure, but they have recruiters that kind of go and recruit people from, you know, for all the laborers, the construction workers. I think they'll go to the rural areas or the cities in India and Pakistan and Philippines and recruit, you know, they need 1,000 men to build a skyscraper. They'll get 1,000 men and buy them all plane tickets and get them passports and send them off to the Emirates.
So they have little villages that are set up as like worker camps?
Yeah, right, if you drive through the desert, you'll see like little compressed little cities out in the desert, just, you know, with the house, tens of thousands of workers. They're usually kind of in out of the way places.
Or is it fairly good living conditions?
Well, compared to where they came from, yeah. But there isn't a blade of grass. It's just desolate.
So where did you guys live? Where did you live?
Well, we lived in Abu Dhabi in the city close to the embassy and in a 22-story building on the top floor with a great view. Thanks to you
and
guys.
How do you,
your tax dollars paid for that.
And how do you get this job?
It's funny, actually, that my joke was that I was working for the State Department, and it's actually really, really competitive to get a job with the State Department.
I bet.
But it turns out the back door, the easy way, is just to go to medical school. It's a lot easier for a physician.
Yeah.
Except go to medical school, and you can have one of those 60 jobs that exist,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So you're looking forward to Senegal.
Yeah, yeah. Abu Dhabi was black and white, being in a police state, there was right and wrong, but, you know, also with the abayas, you know, the women wearing black and the men wearing white, the sand was white, it was just not a colorful environment.
It was also very much a country without a soul, too. It's like without, everybody's
like
just trying to make money, get rich.
Yeah.
But we are looking forward to the music, the food, the a little more, I guess, human level experience.
What is the food like?
Dates, laban, which is a watery yogurt.
Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Middle Eastern, Lebanese type food.
It was the
falafel,
that brought
hummus,
the edible food in.
Bita, chicken and rice, lots of chicken and rice.
Vegetables?
They grew peppers, eggplants in these greenhouses. These greenhouses I was telling you about, where they're off the grid, and so they have to have a generator to start the air conditioners. The greenhouses are to cool the environment so the plants will grow, and then they capture the water. The air conditioners dehumidify the air, and they capture the water, and it's hydroponics, and so it's pretty amazing system.
So they have a market?
You could walk into a supermarket, though, and feel very comfortable. I mean, they have supermarkets there that have everything.
And because there's people
from everywhere in the world there, you find these supermarkets are huge, and they have every kind of food imaginable. Mm-hmm. So you can find tortilla shells, next to the, the hummus section and the...
I going to the grocery store, we had a tiny little grocery store in our apartment building, and I could just do a full 360 in the produce section. I could see peaches from Russia, grapes from Georgia, oranges from South Africa, Egypt, Oman. You could find fruits and vegetables from all over the world.
I hate to interrupt this, but we need to wrap it up.
Okay.
We want to talk to you more, though, when we get done. So let's keep talking. But thank you very much, Dr. Paul Zimmer and Tia Lieber, for coming in and talking to us today for Talk of the Rock.
Did it rain there?
Once.
<No.
laughs>
Once
in
Dubai.
2 years.
Not in Abu Dhabi.
Did that answer your last question, Mike? That was it.
It's been great to be here. Thanks for
Thank you guys very much. We really appreciate it.